now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year.
Hello and welcome to The Game with me, Gabriel Marcotti, winner of the Times Podcast of the Year and Young Podcaster of the Year. Today I'm joined by the names who will be first on my acceptance speech. My boss, Tony Evans, my role model, Matt Hughes, and of course, Rory K. Smith. In today's show, we'll look at the battles at the Emirates and up north and discussing the two relegated sides. So let's crack on and move to North London, Arsenal against Manchester United. Tony, this used to be the rivalry which defined most of the last decade. It felt flat. Was it simply because United have won the title and probably spent the week celebrating and Arsenal didn't seem to do much?
Well, both teams have achieved the targets, haven't they? United have won the league. Arsenal finished somewhere in the top four. Money in the bank, that'll be fine.
Isn't it a done deal, Hughesy? Arsenal finishing in the top four, which to them is like winning the title?
It's not a done deal, and I was a bit disappointed by Arsenal yesterday. But if you look at the remaining fixtures, you've got to say they're going to have a very good chance. QPR next week, Wigan, and the final game escapes him. But I think it's Newcastle, exactly.
It's a done deal.
Another gimme. So, yeah, I think they will probably finish fourth, and if I was Tottenham now, I'd be feeling under quite a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I mean, they'll finish fourth mainly because Chelsea play Spurs, so it takes them. One of those two teams will drop points.
So in terms of the game itself, you said you weren't very impressed. I mean, obviously Arsenal get the early lead. Walcott, I think we can all agree, was offside. But I thought, look, this kind of plays into Arsenal's hands. United will wake up and there'll be room for Arsenal on the counterattack and whatever else. But what we saw was United sort of woke up slowly and still created loads of chances and probably could have won that game, right?
Yeah, other than the first half hour, United with a better team, which I think is a bit of an indictment of Arsenal, given they have far more to play for. Van Persie had a great chance. Phil Jones missed an absolute sitter. And second half as well, it only looked like United were the only team going to win. The one United player who I thought was very poor was Wayne Rooney, who made one excellent ball to Giggs late on. But other than that, I didn't even notice he was playing. Which has got to be a concern, not so much for United because they barely need him, but for the player himself and for England.
We're going to talk in a minute about United because, of course, they've actually clinched the title last Monday since we were last on. But I want to get something from you guys on Arsenal, actually, because it seemed in the summer that we all talked, there are so many people talked about how Robin Van Persie was irreplaceable and unbelievable and the greatest thing since sliced bread. The reality is Arsenal will likely finish with the same points total as last season or be very, very close to it anyway. They may yet finish third or they may more likely finish fourth. Did we maybe overrate Van Persie and undervalue Arsenal's signings this season or indeed the job that Wenger did? Bearing in mind also that everybody thinks the sun shines out of Bayern Munich's tuchus, but Arsenal are one of three teams to have beaten Bayern Munich this season as well. And of course, they did reach the knockout stage of the Champions League.
I think I see your point, but I think is it not more that selling Van Persie, Arsenal have broadly replaced the aggregate of what Van Persie brought in terms of goals and assists, blah, 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 which is why they are roughly as good now as they were last season. The bad thing with selling Van Persie was that it meant they had to catch up to where they were rather than kick on.
But you've replaced an older guy who makes a lot of money with a younger guy who makes a lot less money. And you've added Cazorla as well.
I think there's another side to this. And, you know, and I hate this statistification of football. Oh, they got the same points as last year. It must be the same. The league is considerably worse. It's a pile of crap. And Van Persie, with 25 goals in there, might have pushed them up to challenge for the title. And they've never even looked as if they're in a sniff of a challenge with the title. Take your statistics, ram them right up your jacksie, and go and watch some football.
Husey, are they roughly the same, or are they actually better off than 12 months ago?
I think they're worse off. I think a few of us sat down with Ivan Gazidis a few weeks ago in Munich, and he took exception to the widespread belief that Arsenal are in decline, and used the statistical argument and claimed, you know, we finished third or fourth every year and the points are about the same. But two things: if you look at the gap from the top, it gets bigger every single year, and also, more subjectively, if you look at the quality of the squad, you can't compare. Every year there's a drop off in quality because generally they're still their best players. I was looking at the two squads yesterday, and I think maybe other than Wilshere, who was on the bench and not fit, I was struggling to come up with a single Arsenal player who would get in the United team. And that is pretty damning indictment of how they've fallen, because even 3 or 4 years ago they would have been 60-40, and going further back it would have been maybe skewed in Arsenal's favour. So the gap between the very best in the country and Arsenal continues to grow, in my view, and finishing fourth, although an achievement, shouldn't mask that.
No room at the inn for Santi Cazorla, then.
No, but I think that's the point, isn't it? That Hughie's quite right. The gap is getting bigger because Arsenal are effectively standing still. So Arsenal are the same side roughly as they were last season. Do they replace Van Persie? Not with Santi or Giroud, but Santi and Giroud and Podolski. The problem is that they haven't closed the gap at all. And then United get better just because they have Van Persie, so the gap gets bigger. That's the problem Arsenal have got.
Well, the thing you should do, right, as a football club, is keep your best players and replace the worst players.
Yeah.
That way, everyone moves up and you get a better side. What Arsenal have done, they've sold their best players and they've not replaced the worst players.
Right, although some might say in the age of financial fair play and metrics and all that jazz, you want to sell your best players just before they start to decline and replace them with other players who have an upside and can get better, right?
Well, Fabregas.
Which is what? Which
I can
is
see
what?
Fabregas was right on the edge. Right on the edge. He was just about to go. You know, how old was he? 30, 39, 40?
Sorry, Husey, what was that?
That's what Arsenal used to do, isn't it? They sold Vieira and Henri sort of at maybe slightly over the peak and replaced them with Nasri and sort of Fabregas. Was bought in to replace Vieira in some respects, but they've not been able to do that now because they haven't been able to keep their best players long enough because they've not won things. And also, I think Wenger's biggest problem is his naivety, and he has too much faith in his players. He's not ruthless enough. I looked at the squad yesterday, and I could think of about Manchester United probably had four or five right backs who were better than Bakary Sagnia, but because Arsenal have only got Carl Jenkinson, Sagnia still plays every week. There isn't enough depth and competition within the squad to mean you can get rid of players. So basically, those very well played average players at Arsenal keep their place, and that's where they are. Where they are,
Tony, you're champing at the bit here because, of course, you want to talk about one of your favourite subjects, Manchester United, and celebrate them their 20th championship, no doubt. And on a serious note, Sir Alex is so in your face. We talk about him all the time. There's so many layers to him. Beyond the fact that, you know, you said that the Premier League wasn't good this year, I would agree with you that the best teams certainly weren't very good. And so they go and they win the title by a mile without playing particularly well or even close to their potential this year. I know it's really difficult to put somebody in, you know, a contemporary and historical context. But, and I don't want to provoke you by asking you to compare him to Paisley and Shankly, but apart from Paisley and Shankly, Are we seeing the greatest manager British football has ever produced?
I think without a doubt, I think over the past 3 years, 4 years, he's proved himself to be one of the greatest, certainly in the top three.
The other two being Paisley and Shankly.
Well, I mean, if not the greatest, I mean, you know, the reality of it, he's won the league with teams which you look at and you think they shouldn't be anywhere near it. You know, it's a,
would you count this United team as one of those?
I personally think this is the weakest United squad Ferguson's had since he won the league in 92-93.
But that's interesting because Husey just said that, you know, they have like 50 right backs who are better than Bakary Sagna and blah blah blah. And
that doesn't mean. I mean, you know, it's you know, there's under 14 teams that have better right backs than Sagna. So you know, that yes, they have got better players, but overall, the standard of the squad. I mean, look at the players that, you know, are now sort of team members. I mean, you've got Cleverley, people like Cleverley. Even like 6 or 7 years ago, they would have been right on the margins of the first team. That you look at the United midfield and you think, how can they win at such a canter, the league? And it's Ferguson, it's Force of Will, it's the way he does things. And it's unbelievable. And you can only take your hat off to it. I hate saying all that.
I know. Matt, I want to... one of the things which I find remarkable about United, I mentioned this before, but it just still blows my mind, is there are only six United players who've been on the pitch for at least 65% of United's minutes this season. Now, we know that he likes rotating his squad, but there's no other team in the world that is like this. That even approaches this. And of those six guys who played more than two-thirds of United's minutes this season, okay, Carrick and Van Persie were fantastic, but you know, De Gea and Raphael are people who are still, I think, developing, both had good seasons. The other two, Evra and Rio, and you know, Rio had a good season, but you know, talking about two guys who are on the wane. To be able to do that in those circumstances, I mean, why is he so different? Not just from everybody else in this country, but from everybody else in the universe.
Well, I disagree with Tony. I think United's squad is very good, and that is one of the reasons they've won the league, because as you say, they've rotated and managed to maintain the level. I think it's a very good squad, but there are holes in certain areas, mainly midfield. If you look at the forwards, you've got Chicharito, who's their fourth choice striker at a club where they largely play one up front, which is, you know, staggering strength and depth to have.
This rotating cast of characters they have on the wing, I'm absolutely mystified by it. I mean, I know like we never get any real information out of United because they're so locked up, but you know, is Nani fit? Is he not fit? Does it make sense if he's fit and you're not playing him to pay him so much money? What are your plans? We don't know. Nobody ever knows. Ashley Young is there 1 second and then he disappears and we don't see him for 6 weeks.
And then we have to ask the question, what is the point of Ashley Young?
Well, Ashley Young, who played every single minute for England at the Euros. There's so many sort that, of, I think, impon... What?
That's no great kind of praise, is it? It's not like England and Brazil 1970.
No, that's fine. But what I'm saying is there's so many imponderables around this team that, to me at least, is part of the fascination with Sir Alex Ferguson, is because nobody can ever get any information out of that club. You just don't know what's going on. I mean, is Smalling not playing because he's injured, or is Smalling not playing because Sir Alex doesn't rate him? I mean, I don't know. I find this just completely, like, what he does is just so different from everybody else, and he works, and yeah, and I agree with Tony, that's why I think he is, if not the greatest, on a par with whoever you would argue is the greatest. First thing else out there about Rooney, Husey, we've had these stories. I mean, Ducker's been reporting about him to Paris Saint-Germain. I'm skeptical that this is really an option, and it sounds to me like something that if I were Rooney's agents, I would happily invent and put out there. My sense is ultimately he's going to stay because he's got nowhere else to go. Are you buying that?
I think he'll stay, certainly this summer. The big question is about the contract talks.
Well, sorry, somebody say he'll stay. You said he'll stay this summer. He will sign a new contract, right? They're not going to keep him and let him go down to and let him run his contract out.
Well, that's the big issue, isn't it? I think when he was dropped to the Real Madrid game, we all got very excited and assumed that it was Fergie signalling he would sell him. I think Fergie probably would sell him if he got good money for him and found the club to pay his wages. But that's the problem. There are very few clubs who can afford to pay 220 grand a week to a guy who's not guaranteed to start. So I think, in hindsight, I think being dropped for that game was probably a shot across the bows with regard to the contract. And he might get an extension, but it's certainly not going to be on improved terms and may even be involved taking a pay cut. So that's going to be a conversation between Rooney's advisors and Man United. I think the club would like him to stay, but he's not the main man anymore and he's going to have to accept that. He may end up playing him in quite a lot of midfield, I think, as his career winds down.
Are we saying Rooney's career is winding down a bit too early? What is he, like 28?
28, but did we not always know that Rooney might not... Rooney was never going to do a Giggs, was he? He's not got the body type to go on until he's 39. I think it was always fairly obvious that by the time Rooney hit 30, he'd be on the wane, and that's not a pun. But yeah, I think he is. He's not the player he was. There's a debate over whether he's fulfilled talent he should in the way
that he
should have done.
Was he ever the player he was? I mean, one of the problems with Rooney is that we were told by the likes of Ericsson that we were getting a white Pelé, and you know what? It turned out he's just all right. He's just a good player.
I think the problem with Rooney. I think I'd go beyond that. I say Rooney has been an excellent player, but I don't see any vast improvement in Wayne Rooney now to Wayne Rooney the 16-year-old, and that I think is probably a product of the star culture that built up around him.
That's true.
All right, before we move on, I just want to remind everybody that if he continues at his current pace, Wayne Rooney will become Manchester United's all-time leading goal scorer in all competitions by his 30th birthday, surpassing your god, Rory, Bobby Charlton. Moving on to the stadium formerly known as the JJB, Wigan and Spurs. Tony, I was really excited for this because I thought, like, oh, this is great. Two teams who both have a lot to play for. And two managers who we've all been praising and two teams that play good football. It looked to me like Wigan dominated this game.
They did, and I mean, I think the highlights were a little bit unrepresentative because you saw the chance for Tottenham at the end, you know, the late goal and the chance, and you think, oh, you know, Tottenham should have won it. But Wigan played well. Wigan played good football, as they do at this time of year, which always throws up the question, why don't they do this in September? The sun's out then as well.
Hughie, you've got your pulse on the transfer market and the wonderful shady world of agents and intermediaries and club executives. Assuming Wigan lose or get hammered in the FA Cup final and get relegated, do clubs start thinking of Roberto Martinez in a different way? Does he become something of a lesser manager in their eyes? Not should he, but does he?
I don't think so necessarily. I think the start of every season, if you keep Wigan up, you've done a very good job. If you narrowly fail, reach a cup final, I think he's done a pretty good job as well. So I think he's got enough credit in the bank to maintain his reputation. I think managers can survive one relegation. Very few managers haven't been relegated at all in their career. It's when they start taking two or three teams down that their reputation would suffer. So I think, for example, whatever happens at Aston Villa in the short term, like a club, a sort of medium level club of that size would always have Roberto Martinez on his shortlist. He might not get an interview for the job at Liverpool when that next comes up, as he did last summer, but I still think his reputation would be fairly high.
There's a couple of quite interesting things that could happen this summer, and the emphasis very much is on could with regards to Martinez, because you don't know quite what's going to happen with Pardew at Newcastle anymore. Obviously, they've had two very bad results, and things do seem to be turning the jungle drums are sort of beating a little bit with Pardew. That 8-year contract might not last quite as long as everyone thought it would.
A bromance between him and Ashley.
Apparently so, but then, you know, bromances come to an end, Gab, as ours did.
Exactly.
And isn't that 8-year contract, in fact, a rolling contract?
Yeah.
So it's not really an 8-year contract.
It's like the 10-year contract that Big Sam had at Bolton, remember that?
It's also, very much like my contract, Tony. Entirely rolling. Very fluid, but the other one that could come up is Everton, obviously, if Moyes leaves, which Martinez you'd have thought would be quite well suited to. They're both jobs at the level that where he would be tempting, where I don't think relegation would necessarily kind of influence their thinking, and at the right sort of level for him to test himself at the stage above, because he is. Gets Wigan playing nice. They play, the difference isn't that they play nice football throughout the season. It's just that only now do they start getting results. That's the problem Wigan have got. So yeah, I think this summer is the one where Martinez, whatever happens, probably has to jump, because at some point with Wigan, they pay less money than everybody else, they spend less than everybody else, they've got a smaller squad than everybody else. At some point, your luck's going to run out.
What happens to Wigan if they go down? I mean, when you consider last season, in terms of the finances, they got $40 million from the telly, and the whole other turnover was $4 million. You know, everything else. So you take away that Premier League television money, you know, there will be parachute payments, but you know, they're going to get $4 or $5 million coming in. They're not going to be able to keep any of the contracts.
But I think the wages are only running at about 30. I think it's $36 million, the wages. So what Wigan would do, I would imagine, is you'd sell McCarthy, who's an excellent player and would get into pretty much any team in the Premier League.
He would, actually.
McCarthy is, I'm stunned that he's still at Wigan. James McCarthy is almost as good a midfielder as there is in Britain. You'd sell Callum McManaman, who I think looks excellent. You'd get 10, 12, 15 for him. People like Kone, you probably get decent money for. Antolin Alcaraz, if he's fit again. There's money there to be made. So they would have to break up that side and start again, I think. But they'd get £15 million for the parachute payment, an extra £5 million for their own turnover, plus the Football League television money, they'd be okay.
Well, what they'd have? They'd have a 3-year window to get back up, otherwise the very survival of that club would be in doubt.
No, Whelan would bankroll it. I don't think there's... They would have to... I think if we didn't go, they probably won't come back, but I think the club will adapt and survive.
Right, enough negativity about Wigan, because of course they're not down yet, and I still, the way it's looking, it could well still come down to that huge game against Villa on the last day of the season. What about Spurs for a minute? And Rory kind of sort of preempted me a little bit before by posing this question.
Was that one of your points, Gab?
But it is really worthwhile. No, but listen, all us Euro snobs, right, we all look down our nose at Harry Redknapp and we say, oh, Villas-Boas is much better. We all say that they play prettier football this year. I'm not a Modric or a Van der Vaart guy, so I don't necessarily believe that their squad is weaker this year than last year, because everybody tells me how wonderful Vertonghen is and the PFA team of the year. And of course, I think Moussa Dembélé's had a fantastic season and Tom Huddleston is fit and all that jazz. And Gareth Bale is arguably a better player this year than he was last year. So that being the case, Tony, is there any message to be gleaned here if AVB finishes below Redknapp? No, in the much worse Premier League this season than last season.
Well, they've been very disappointing, that's for sure.
Really?
Well, overall, I mean, they got off to a bad start, didn't they? And then they bounced back and you thought, oh, this is all going in the right direction. And they've just tailed off at the point where Tottenham seem to traditionally tail off over the last few years. And you wonder whether it's a sign of a deeper sort of malaise at the club, a confidence thing. I mean, I think it's Villas-Boas' first year. I think he's done... I think you give him a pass mark no matter where you finish. I think next year will be a bigger test. I think we'll see it'll be more like his team, his squad, and we'll see whether he kicks on and moves in the right direction. But you can't help feeling at the end, you expected just a little bit more from Tottenham, especially with Bale as he is.
Excuse me, did you expect more this season from Spurs, or I mean, would you say that, you know, thus far they're actually moving in the right direction?
I don't think you can expect anything from Tottenham Hotspur because they're so unpredictable. I think in some ways this is a classic, typical Tottenham team. They can win at Old Trafford, lose at home to Norwich within a short space of time. But I do think
the train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The fans had the right to hope for a bit more. If you're going to sack a manager who takes you to finish fourth, you should improve on that. And Villas Boas hasn't done that. I think he deserves another year, and I think he's done an okay job. But as Tony says, no better than that. I think if you compare the players in Tottenham's squad and their starting lineup to Arsenal's, I think they're considerably better. Yeah, there's a fair chance Arsenal finish above them. And if that happens, I think they've underachieved.
In our debate this week, our producer Chris Skinner and his weird chicken fetish wanted us to talk about Blackburn, but since that case is still in court, we will move on and discuss the two relegated sides, Reading and QPR, who put on a real, I thought, stinker in the nil-nil. Right, you were there. I want to just get one thing out of the way because Joey Barton tweeted about this and this whole issue with Bisingwa smiling in the tunnel and so on. And I know certainly in the weird world of Twitter, it became an issue. Other people posted pictures of a very stern-looking Joe Jordan next to a smiling Harry Redknapp. You seem to defend Bisingwa probably because his foreign and his name ends in a vowel.
No, I'm not defending Bisingwa. I'm simply dismissing the biggest non-story of all time as a non-story. Right. QPR and Reading both knew they were getting relegated yesterday or at some point in the very near future. So that game, I was there. The whole thing was flat. I don't think either side particularly cared. I think they'd both given up hope. And you can kind of understand that in the circumstances. It's not ideal, but whatever. As he left the pitch, Bisingwa bumped into Daniel, I don't know how to pronounce the surname properly, Carriço, the former Sporting Lisbon captain and the Portuguese international, who I am imagining that Bisingwa knows, right? Carriço said something to him, and I imagine that was, oh God, we're both rubbish, aren't we? Or something along those lines. And Bisingwa gave him a friendly smile, put his arm on his shoulder, you know, just to say hello. He was not, it's not like he was standing on the pitch pointing at the QPR fans and cackling and giving them the wanker sign.
We don't actually know that Daniel Carriço said this.
He
could have said, look at all these fools out here who pay us millions.
Yes.
Let's all smile and laugh in their face.
He could have said that, but I think it's very unlikely. The whole exchange lasted about 3 seconds. And it was Bisingwa's smile was very much the smile of a man who had just seen an old friend. Behind him, Harry Redknapp was smiling because he was talking to one of the Reading staff. Behind him, Clint Hill was smiling. And I think if you don't accuse Clint Hill of not trying, then you're kind of on very shaky ground. People smile. I don't want to sound stupid. People smile at funerals. Sometimes, even when you're sad, you smile. I'm not convinced that Bisingwa cares enormously that QPR have been relegated, but I'm certain he wasn't laughing at the fans, mocking them for coming. It's a pathetic non-issue.
No one in football should be allowed to smile when they lose, ever, ever. And even when they win, we'll have to limit the smiles. It's a stupid thing, isn't it?
Tony, that's it.
It's ridiculous.
And it's not just in football. It's this stupid culture that we all have to be shown to be mourning constantly about everything. We're not allowed to have the full range of human emotions if they're deemed inappropriate by various newspapers. It's pathetic. If Bisingwa was English,
I think he should have committed ritual suicide in the centre circle.
Seppuku for Bisingwa.
Hughesy, at the start of the season, I remember you were on this podcast and you were very scathing about QPR's squad, so much so that we got several complaints from people saying about like, oh, how can Hughesy's wrong? We were fantastic, and Granero and Mbia and Junior Hoylett and whatever else. Obviously, I think events this season vindicated your viewpoint at the time. But I'm curious, what happens next? QPR have a lot of players who make a lot of money. I think some of them are very good, and I don't think they belong on the scrap heap. And I'm thinking specifically of Hoylett and Granero are sort of the first two that
you've
come
obviously
to mind.
Not watched Hoylett this season. It's been remarkable, yeah. The turnaround in Hoylett, because I thought he was excellent at Blackburn. Granero's in the midst of some sort of existential crisis, but needs to go back to Spain where people won't tackle him. But Junior Hoylett is not even a shadow of the player he was at Blackburn. He looks appalling.
Everyone is saying it's going to be much easier for Reading to come back up because they're well run and the wage bill is sensible and blah blah blah, which is sort of fairly easy knee-jerk thing to say. But the bottom line is QPR do have some good players. Anything could happen there. So it's pretty difficult to make any predictions of any degree of confidence because they're obviously going to have a huge job to reshape the squad.
But on the new side, though, I mean, you know sort of Fernandez and Batia and whatever else. I mean, people make it seem like he's some kind of fool, but he sunk a lot of money in this club. The only way he's going to get some money back out is if they come back to the Premier League, right?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to walk away. I met him a couple of times and got the distinct impression he was in it for the, you know, him and the people behind him wasn't for owning it for the long haul. But they're going to have to take a serious look at how the club is run, really, and which agents they use and how they spend money. Because everyone said it was unsustainable, and it's going to prove that way, isn't it? Even if they're in the Premier League, they would have had to change. So in the Championship, they're really going to have to adapt. My sense is that they will really go for it next season. They'll try and offload as many of the big earners as they can, and the ones that want to leave will probably be allowed to do so. But I don't imagine they're going to suddenly retrench completely and run themselves on a shoestring. I imagine they're going to throw money at it to try and come back up straight away.
QPR have a really pressing issue in that their wage bill in the last stated set of accounts was 56 million quid. Their turnover, I think, was 62 million quid. That's before Loic Remy, who I think Remy will go, Samba will go, but it's also before several of the signings in the summer. Their wage bill is running at least 90% of turnover, if not more, which, as I understand it, is not allowed in the Championship. So they have to offload players, no question. They have to offload a lot of players or find a way of kind of artificially boosting their revenues, I guess. The problem is that who's going to buy them? There's two or three that you look at and you think, yeah, all right, someone will sign Remy. Samba will go. Granero, you would imagine, will be able to go back to Spain. There'll be someone like Norwich will take a chance on Hoyler, although he has been rubbish all season.
Yeah.
But there has been... There are others who you can't... I mean, Park. Who's going to pay Park 70 grand a week? So you're relying on players to do the decent thing and trying to say, right, well, I'll go somewhere else for a bit less money, which you'd like to think they will, but history sort of suggests they won't. So QPR have got a genuine problem. They also have a problem in that I don't think anybody knows whether the manager will stay. Harry keeps saying, oh, well, you know, I'll do whatever the owners want. But you sort of think, well, will you? Is that's not really how it works. I mean, you can sort of imagine if Cardiff come up and sack Mackay within about five games, you can imagine Redknapp walking out. He might start the season at QPR. I doubt he'll finish it there. So, and then they have this kind of structural issue, which is the endemic use of Twitter. As soon as that game ended yesterday, Fernandez tweeted, Philip Beard tweeted, Joey Barton tweeted, I think Samba and various others have all tweeted this morning, stop tweeting and talk to each other. It's pathetic. It's a club which has a pathological self-regard.
Would you bring Joey Barton back and play him
I think Barton and Derry would do okay in the Championship, but Barton says that Marseille have got a deal in place if he wants it to take him there for next season. I'm sure he'd prefer that than playing in the Championship.
I can't imagine Marseille would pay Barton on a long-term deal what he's on now, what he's reportedly on now. So that would show that Joey Barton would take a pay cut, which I actually think is reasonable because you take a pay cut, you get Champions League football.
Yeah.
He seems happy in Marseille and the south of France as he keeps tweeting. What about Reading? Because... Okay, so I have to admit that they in January they were in a horrible place, and they signed these guys who, you know, apart from Stephen Kelly, who the hell is Hope Akpan and this other guy Jim Blackman or Ron
Nick Blackman?
Well, whoever these guys.
Dab. Footballers aren't called Ron anymore.
Okay, I don't. That's a good point. I don't follow the lower league, so I'm like, who the hell are these people? And you know, I've seen them play a little bit, and I can see that they clearly weren't going to keep Reading up. I got the sense that basically they signed these guys in January. With a view towards, oh, these are people who can help us get out of the Championship next year. Is that what happened, Tony? And if that's the case, were they basically throwing in the towel in January?
Well, I think there was a sense that they knew they were going down by then. I mean, it never really looked good for them, did it? You know, there was never a conviction that Redden were going to stay up. right from the beginning.
But I mean, here's a team. They win the championship, right? They keep the whole squad together. They didn't lose any of their stars from the championship winning side. They spend £10 million net spend. And they're horrible.
Well, you know what? Funnily enough, I was having a conversation within the last week with the chief executive of our club. And he said, like, in his opinion, what you should do when you get promoted from the Championship to the Premier League is sack the manager, no matter how he's good, and get someone in. He said, because they all come with just the one expectation of getting to 17th and just clinging on there. He said, you know, you look at the players and you say, I've got to be loyal to the players. And he said, it doesn't make sense. Get rid of them. He said, if you want to thrive in the Premier League, don't go in there with Championship players. And there was a sense that Redden went in with Championship players.
I wonder who that chief executive could be. There's two things with Redden. One is that the squad that they brought up, they kind of did the right thing, the thing that everyone's meant to do, which is stand by your players, give them a chance, you've got the momentum, blah, blah, blah. The problem is that Redden had a squad comprised essentially of about 23 Robert Earnshaws who were too good for the Championship but not good enough for the Premier League, and that's what's happened. But there is a benefit in what you might term, I guess, like the slingshot approach. You go up, you come back down, and with the extra money and the extra experience, you go straight back up and you build from there. And I think that might be what Reading try and do, which is what West Brom have done effectively. You go up once, you come back down, and then it's the second promotion when you're ready for it that you can start to build.
And this year, I mean, for those who go down next season, the effect will be even more pronounced with the new television deal. I mean, Reading have missed out by a year, so it'll make it a bit more difficult for them. But I mean, I do think we're going to see a lot of up and down teams, you know, the yo-yo teams in
it's one in 9 years or something that have bounced straight back from relegation, so it's relatively rare.
Alright, enough of that rubbish. Time for some quick hits. After a 2-1 win over West Ham, City of 71 points and 4 games left. Swansea and Reading away, Norwich and West Brom at home. Tony, it's hardly Bayern and Barcelona, and I know how much you love to make comparisons between different years and league places and points totals, and how you always think it's extremely relevant. So all this being the case, and given that they could end up with just 6 fewer points than last season, is it really such an abject failure this year?
The big statistic this year is last year they had a Premier League trophy, this year they haven't. And that's a failure because they've got the best squad in the league. They win the FA Cup, which, you know, you've got to take your hats off to them because any trophy is a good trophy. But a squad like this, not to win the league and to be so far behind Man United, is a disappointment.
Chelsea overcome Swansea 2-0. Hughesy, two questions. Are you confident they're on track for the Champions League? And with Frank Lampard reaching 201 goals, which is one short of Bobby Tamling's record, what are the odds that if he doesn't break it this year, he'll be back next year just so he can break the record?
What is it with you in odds and percentages?
You don't actually have to give me the odd, but what is the likelihood if you prefer?
Slim.
Really?
But I do think Chelsea, are you surprised by that?
That would be so cruel and mean. Like, you leave him hanging one goal from Tamling's record?
Well, so you think, like, you really think Roman Abramovich is going to just give Frank 150 grand a week just so he can break a record?
No, I like to think that Frank would take a pay cut so he could come back and break a record.
What gets me is all these artificial records. You know, Bobby Tamlin's record. We're all excited. Bobby Tamlin. Whoa, he's broken Bobby Tamlin. Do you know what? When I was a kid growing up, you know what I want to do in my life? I want to break Bobby Tamlin's record. And it all goes back to Nike and Ian Wright. You know, with the Cliff Baxton record.
Baxton, yeah.
And they invented, and it's a marketing tool, and it's a load of old tosh.
Well, it was a big deal to you when Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's record, right?
Oh, well, now that is something.
Newcastle have taken 4 of a possible 18 points in their last 6 games. Rory, yesterday's 6-0 home defeat to a Luis Suarez, yes, the non-supply-dependent striker, Luis Suarez-less Liverpool, was an absolute embarrassment. Can you pinpoint what's wrong and maybe come up with a solution?
So what's wrong, I think, is they've suffered a lot of injuries to key players, which has been important, although it's not an excuse. Their midfield appears to have gone on holiday, which is an interesting approach towards the end of the season. Johan Cabaye, who I think is excellent, has just sort of forgotten how to play football. Cheick Tiote is appalling suddenly. The solution, I think, is hang on for dear life and try and get three more points over the course of the rest of the next four games or whatever, or maybe three, and then look in the summer at whether Alan Pardew is better exemplified by his good season last season or his bad season this season, and that's a very difficult choice to make.
And then go and sign Harry Redknapp or Roberto Martinez to replace him.
I think if I had to replace him, it would be with Martinez, yeah.
All right, there you go. Folks figured it would be doom and gloom for Liverpool without Luis Suarez, so they only go and put six past Newcastle. Tony, do you have renewed faith in the likes of Sturridge, Borini and Coutinho? And while you're at it, what did you make of Suarez's 10-game ban?
Well, six past Newcastle might not be the landmark game that people would like it to be. Renewed faith? Well, Sturridge will do a job and he'll score goals. Borini, I don't think, will. And Coutinho, we'll find out next season. Everyone's seen him once. It's when they see you the second time that you find out about the players, you know, whether they're going to last.
I tell you what, he can spot a through ball, can't he, Coutinho? Some of the passes are superb.
He can, but they'll get tighter on him next season, yeah. And we'll see. You know, hopefully he'll be robust enough to survive and thrive. If he does, then it'll be brilliant for Liverpool. Suarez's 10-game ban, too long. The product of muddied thinking from the FA, as usual. You know, he deserved a long ban, stupid biting people on the pitch. But frankly, it's not as bad as breaking someone's leg.
Which I think Roy Keane got three games for, right? And then another five when he gloated about it in his book 18 months later. Mm. Everton beat Fulham 1-0 and haven't given up on a place in Europe next year. But more importantly, Husey, what's your guess about where Moyes is going to be next season? And also, I want percentages, and I'd like you to include Schalke, since that's the hipster choice.
You're not getting a percentage because football's an art, not a science. And percentage probabilities are pretty meaningless. It's very hard to call, he said, sitting on the fence in his garden, actually. But I think it'll probably stay. I think the contractual standoff is partly to do with how much money you'll have to spend next season and also whether Everton are able to keep hold of key players such as Fellaini, Baines and even maybe Ross Barkley. But I think if Everton are in the Europa League and he's got a bit of money to spend, I think that'll be enough for Davey.
Should he pursue the Schalke job? Would that be a good, if you were his agent, would that be a good, and you really had that option, would that be a better career move for him than staying with Bill Kenwright?
It's attractive, but it's a gamble, isn't it? And from the very little I know, David Moyes, he's not exactly, I'm describing him as being a risk taker. He's pretty conservative in his outlook and in the way he puts together football teams, manages his career. That's probably why he's been Everton for 10 years. So I think he's probably more likely to go for the slightly safer option than thrusting himself into a very tough Bundesliga where, you know, you'd be up against Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, who, as we know, are two of the best teams that have ever existed.
Exactly, as we all discovered this past week. Rory, last night was the Professional Footballers Association Awards dinner, to which you were not invited because you're neither a professional footballer nor a friend of the stars the way our own Ollie Kay was. Two talking points from it, if you will. You can talk about Gareth Bale, Luis Suarez and Robin Van Persie and the candidates to win the award. But since we've all kind of been talked out on that, you may choose to discuss Reginald D. Hunter and his performance, which some found somewhat controversial.
Right, so I'm probably on comfier ground with the award. So just to touch on that, Bale, I think, is probably the right choice, but there is a problem in terms of it's ridiculous having someone nominated for the Player of the Year award who's also nominated for the Young Player of the Year, because if they are Player of the Year, that by definition, they must be Young Player of the Year as well. The Reginald D. Hunter thing, I think, is something of a non-issue. The debate appears to be that because the FA, during the Suarez case, determined that it was
Tell us what Reginald D. Hunter did, because not everybody was there in attendance.
Reginald Hunter is a black American comedian whose act centres on fairly liberal use of the N-word, which I think we all agree is bad when non-black people use it. And personally, I feel is really up to black people if they want to use it, probably on an individual basis. Certainly not for me as a white person to determine whether they should find it offensive. The problem is, of course, that the FA determined during the Suarez case that it was always offensive to use the N-word, regardless of context. That is the phrase that's got them in trouble. The PFA backed up that statement, and they then went and booked a comedian who they knew used it fairly liberally.
And, of course, Paul Elliott.
And Paul Elliott obviously was sacked for using it as well. What I would say is it's a very difficult issue. The broader context of the issue is whether black people should use the N-word. Personally, I feel it's an issue for them. It's not for me or for any other individual, or particularly the FA, to tell them whether it's appropriate or not. The mistake that was made was the FA statement saying that it's never appropriate to use that word. But I don't think you should. If you make a mistake, there is no point in pig-headedly sticking with it. If you were wrong to do something, you should admit the mistake.
I think we're missing the point here. Who at the PFA booked them?
Just go and look at the website.
No, but do you know what? Do you know what's amazing? And I don't want to sort of tread on toes. I've not been to a PFA do, but I've been to plenty of football industry dudes with comedians, and I'm quite relieved it's a black person being racist this time, because they have a lot of off-colour comedians, and I've been at dudes where there has been an awkward silence throughout the room. Not at sort of overt racism, but certainly at sexism and homophobia from the comedians. So this is in some ways a step forward. Right, Gab, one for you. Paris Saint-Germain, the French team, look on their way to winning the Ligue 1 title. But they sure made it difficult for themselves against Evian, didn't they?
They certainly did. They were playing Evian, who's kind of like the boogey team, because Evian knocked them out on penalty kicks in the French Cup. And they struggled. They finally took the lead through Pastore. Then they went down to 10 men. Then that David Beckham got himself sent off, I think, somewhat harshly. And then there was a mass brawl at the end with Sidigu also getting a red card, which means they're looking at 3 suspensions in the upcoming games. They will still win, but this is a case of limping across the finish line.
I hate Evian. You know what? They sold a soul when they changed the name for that water company.
They really did, because, of course, the team was known before as Volvic Tonon-Gaillard. All right, that's all we've got time for this week. Before I go, quick mention for a live cricket show, because the Times will be hosting this summer a variety of live cricket shows up and down the country. Andy Zaltzman will be the host, despite the fact that he has a bad hairline. He's extremely funny and, of course, does the great podcast, The Bugle, together with the very talented John Oliver. And, of course, Chris Skinner is the producer of that, which is why I'm plugging it. Times Plus subscribers can get discounted tickets at mytimesplus.co.uk. That's all we've got time for this week. It's been fun. It's been real. Thank you to my guests, Tony Evans, Matt Hughes, and, of course, Rory K. Smith. You can come find us on Twitter to share your thoughts, or you can email us, as so many of you do every single week. It's gamepodcast@thetimes.co.uk. And those people who were crucifying Hughesy for being so down on QPR this week, that's the address to write to if you wish to apologize to the great man. So remember, you can always go to thetimes.co.uk. You'll find news, views, web chats, blogs, and analysis. We're all on Twitter. Some might say that Tony Evans and Rory Smith and myself are rather compulsive tweeters. Hughesy, a little bit less so, but still, it's quality, not quantity. Till next time, bye-bye.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.